Marjorie, I think, going to come and bring us a reading from Psalm 90, and then Paul will preach.
Good morning, church family. Our reading is Psalm 90, if you've just heard. And if you have a church Bible handy, it's page 496. That's the only number I have. Psalm 90. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You return man to dust and say, return, O children of man, for 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday when it is past, or as a watch in the night. You sweep them away as with a flood. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed. In the evening it fades and withers. For we are brought to an end by your anger, by your wrath we are dismissed. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of our presence, your presence. For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. Who considers the power of your anger and your wrath according to the fear of you? So teach us to number our days, that we may get a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? Have pity on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, and for as many years as we have seen evil. Let your work be shown in your servants, and your glorious power in the children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the works of our hands upon us, yet establish the works of our hands. This is the word of the Lord.
Psalm 90 is a community lament. It was written after a particularly difficult time for the people of God. And so it's really fitting for us to reflect on it today. As a nation, we're mourning after the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. But as a church and as a community, we're mourning as well. And tomorrow will be the funeral of Alex and Ria's unborn baby, Miriam Tatchell. Some of you will know as well that Beth and Henry had some sad news this week, that their unborn baby won't live outside the womb. And so as a church, as well as a country, we're in mourning. And at times like this, Psalm 90 is a comfort and provides us with hope. You see, the psalm tells us that we can respond to the shortness, the fragility, the sinfulness of life by making the eternal God our home and by looking to Him to establish our lives and our work while we live here on earth. So there's three things I want us to reflect on from this psalm. I want us to reflect on ourselves, our God, and our home. Ourselves, our God, and our home. First of all, ourselves. The psalm tells us two reminds us of two characteristics of our lives. First of all, our lives are short. Verses 3 to 6, Moses, who wrote the psalm, brings out some vivid images to describe the shortness of our lives. He says in verse 3, "You return man to dust." At Miriam's funeral tomorrow, I'll be saying, "Earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust." We're made from dust, and we will go back to dust. Verse 4, our lives are like a watch in the night. A watchman wakes in the night and looks after the city. That's what they used to do for a couple of hours. And then his watch is over. You sweep them, verse 5, you sweep them away as with a flood. You know, sometimes we can think that we are strong and we are standing strong, but just like a flood of water, a tidal wave washes everything in its path, so the tidal wave of death will wash all of us away. Our lives, verse 5, are like a dream. You wake up in the morning, the dream is forgotten. We are like grass. Grass is a metaphor for not lasting. You know, it springs up in the morning and then cut down or scorched by the noonday sun. Gone. You know, a generation comes, a generation goes. And each generation, like new grass, promises a lot. You know, the new generation, Generation X, or the millennials, or the Generation Z, they grow up and everything's going to be different. They're going to make an impact, and then they die, and a whole new generation comes. Isaac Watts based his hymn that we sang at the start, "Oh God, I Help in Ages Past," on this song. And in it, he has a wonderful phrase in verse 5, to capture the idea of time. Time, like an ever-rolling stream, bears all its sons away. They fly forgotten like a dream, dies at the dawn of day. Time is like a stream and carries us all along. You and I are being carried along by the stream of time, and you can't get off that stream. There's no brakes for you to press to slow the stream down. We're all being carried along. And the older you get, the faster the stream seems to go. So when you're young, a summer seems to last ages. But when you get older, summer has gone in the blink of an eye. Time is carrying all of us away. One of the phrases that keeps coming out about the Queen is that she was a constant, reassuring presence. Queen for 70 years. But now she's gone. In a short time, maybe 50 years, maybe 80 years, maybe 100 years, we'll all be gone, and there'll be a new generation of people in the pews. Our lives are very short. But Moses doesn't stop there. He goes behind the shortness of our life to ask, why is our life short? And he says, our lives are short because our lives are sinful. That's what he says in verses 7 to 11. He says, "For we are brought to an end by your anger. By your wrath we are dismayed. You've set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence." The reason that our lives are cut short by death is because of sin. You know, death is not natural. We weren't meant to die. We weren't created to die. We were meant to live forever. You sense that at funerals. There's something that happens at a funeral when you see the coffin that says, where you say to yourself, that's not right. It's not right that death has come and invaded life and cut it short. And the younger the person is, the more you feel that. So when we bury baby Miriam, there'll be something deep in us that will say, this is wrong. Babies shouldn't die in the womb. But even 96-year-old queens who've lived a good life, who've had a good innings, shouldn't die. Death is not natural. It's wrong. But the reason for death is because of sin, because back in the Garden of Eden, God put a curse on this world and on our lives because Adam and Eve turned their back on God when they took the fruit that God said you shouldn't take. Death is the curse of sin. You see, when we see or experience suffering and death, we should ask ourselves the question, why is this happening? And we're meant to draw the conclusion, the reason this is happening is because there's something wrong. Something wrong with the world, something wrong with you and me. You know, suffering and death are meant to operate like the warning light on the dashboard of your car. You know, you're driving along and suddenly the warning light comes on and starts flashing. And it's there to tell you there's something wrong with the car. But if you're anything like me, what do we do with those warning lights? We ignore them. We carry on driving and hope they're going to go away. And the same is true, I think, about death and about suffering. The warning lights flashing at us, and we try and ignore them, hoping that they'll go away. That's why a week like this week that we've had as a church, as a nation, is helpful. It's sad. It's really sad. But it's also helpful because it means it brings us up short. It reminds us that there is a problem with the world. There's a problem with you and me. This world is under God's curse. And we need to, and so are we, and we need to do something about it. Our lives are short, our lives are sinful. So what's the solution to our lives then? Well, Moses tells us what the solution is right at the start of the psalm. Where does he turn to? For help, for hope, for the solution to the problem of the shortness, the brevity, and the sinfulness of our lives. He turns to God. And he focuses on one attribute of God particularly. God is eternal. Lord, you've been our dwelling place before all generations, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, before creation, before the universe, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. God is eternal. God is everlasting. What do we mean by that? Well, we mean two things. First, on a very basic level, to say that God is everlasting is to say that God never had a beginning and will never have an end. Now, this is step one in theology. It's basic, and yet it's profound. When I was a primary school teacher, I would teach all the different subjects, and one of those would be RE. And about 3 weeks into teaching RE, a child in the class, this would happen every year, a child in the class would put their hand up and ask this question. They'd say, Mr. Jump, who made God? And I would say to that child, and it would happen every single year, without fail, about week three, I'd say, that's a brilliant question. That is a brilliant question. Because if you answer that question, then you are on the road to good theology. And what's the answer? The answer is, God has always been. He's always been, from everlasting to everlasting. He's never had a beginning. He's never had a start. Everything else has had a start, has had a beginning. You see, everything in the universe comes from something that never had a beginning. Our eternal and everlasting God. And not everyone believes that in Manchester today. Many people believe that everything came from nothing. The moon, the stars, 200 trillion stars in the universe, the sun, the mountains, the hills, the seas, the oceans, the streams, the rivers, the birds in the air, the fish in the sea, the sheep on the countryside, you and me come from nothing. If you're here this morning, you think that, then you're really welcome amongst us, but that's just unbelievable. Every cause, every effect has a cause. Every effect has a cause. Every scientist knows that. And the cause of all things is our eternal, uncreated Creator. Our God never had a beginning and will have no end. But second, to call God everlasting means that he's timeless. That is, he exists outside of time. He's not bound by time. There isn't any past or future for him. Time doesn't affect him. He exists timelessly. Best illustration I can come up with, because this does bend your brains, is the Ashton Canal. So you go up to the Ashton Canal, and imagine there's hundreds of barges on the Ashton Canal, and you're sitting in one barge, and the Ashton Canal is like time, and you're sitting in one barge at one point in time, and you look ahead to the future, and that's the barge in front. You look behind at the past, and that's the barge behind, but that's all you can see. You're bound by the canal. You're bound by time. God is like the helicopter that looks over the whole of the Ashton Canal and sees the barge 200 barges back from you and the barge 200 barges ahead of you. And he sees all these barges at the same moment. God sees the past, the present, and the future equally vividly. You see, everything is present to God. He doesn't increase in knowledge and information. He doesn't forget things that have happened. He's got no new influences. His purposes, his person, his perfection never changes. He is eternal. Now, what does that difference does that make to you and me? Well, it means that, first of all, you've got a shelter in the storms of life. You've got a shelter in the storms of life. See, when the storms of life come, and they do, and they have, you have a refuge in those storms in an eternal God who's not affected by the storms. You know, when the storms of life come, God doesn't go, "Oh, wow, that's taken me by surprise." He knows the storms are coming because he can see the future. He can see the past. He knows these things. The storms don't affect him. They affect us, but they don't affect him. And the storms don't change him. They don't change his plans. "Oh, no, we've got a storm now. I need to change my plans for you and for your life because this storm has suddenly..." That doesn't happen with God because he knows it all. He knows the end from the beginning. His plans don't change. His good plans for your life don't change because of the storms that you're going through. And the storm doesn't change his love for you. It doesn't shake him. You know, when a storm shakes us, you know, our emotions go all over the place. God's don't. He constantly loves you through the storm. He's a shelter in the storms of life, our eternal God. But he's also hope for the future. You know, one of the things we feel in times of trouble and difficulty is fear. Fear about the future, because times of trouble shake our lives. And when our lives are shaken, everything can appear uncertain. The present can appear uncertain, and we can be unsure. We can struggle to make decisions and know what the way forward is. But the future can seem clouded and uncertain as well. And uncertainty breeds anxiety. We can be anxious. We can be fearful. We can be worried. We don't know the future, let alone control it. But we have a God who knows the future and controls the future. The future doesn't take God by surprise. And so you can find hope in a God who has the future in his hands, who has you in his hands and your future in his hands, and will lead you through the future, even if you don't know what it is. The future is secure in the arms and the hands of our everlasting God. You see, the answer to the shortness of life, the sinfulness of life, is found in our eternal God. And so the question is, how do you get this hope into your life? How did Moses get this hope into his life? And so our third thing we need to reflect on is making God our home. That's what Moses did in verse 1. Lord, you've been our home, our dwelling place, before all generations. You see, Moses, at this time of great difficulty for himself and for God's people, made God his home. There's echoes here of something else Moses said just before the people went into the promised land in Deuteronomy 33. Moses says, the eternal God is your dwelling place. And underneath are the everlasting arms. You see, God, our God, is our only hope because he is our only home because only he lasts forever. God is our only hope because he's our only home because only he lasts forever. If you make God your home, then you will be secure. Secure now and secure for eternity. And if you don't, then like everything else in this world, you will pass away. You see, our problem, and this is a big problem that we all have, is that we try to make other things in the world our home. We try and make our houses our home. We try and make our families our home. We try and make our money our home, our jobs our home, our friends our home, our hobbies our home. We say, well, if I get those things, then I can make myself at home here. But the problem is they're all passing away. Like dust, like dreams. The river of time is moving along and these things are being washed away. We need to remember that we are ultimately homeless here. That's why we feel restless at times. And we will feel restless unless we find our rest in God, our home. Moses knew that. And when life was hard for him and for the people, he made God his home. Let me ask you, what are you making your home? Where is your home found? Is God your dwelling place? Is God your home? Let me finish by letting you know how you can make God your home. You make your God your home by praying three things. This is what Moses does at the end. First of all, if you want to make God your home, if you want to find your dwelling place in him, in someone who's going to last and last forever, the first thing you need to do is pray. And you need to pray three things. Pray, first of all, that God would teach you. Verse 12, Moses says, teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. What's he saying? He's saying, God, give me a reality check on my life. Help me to number my days. In other words, help me to realize that my days are numbered. They are short. And help me to number my days and realize that my life is sinful. And that is why death is the end of it. God, teach me this, not just in my head, but in my heart. Help me to know this. Why? So that I might repent. So that I might ask for forgiveness for my sins. So that I might get myself right with my eternal God. And so I might have wisdom for my life to use the rest of my life in a right way. Living every moment as if it's precious, because it is. Second thing to pray. Pray, teach me. Second thing, ask God to satisfy you. Moses says, verse 14, satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that I might rejoice and be glad in you all my days. Instead of returning me to the dust, return to me, God, with mercy and love. Satisfy me with that. Ask God to remind you of his unfailing, never stopping, never giving up, always and forever love for you. Ask him to do that every morning, that you might experience new morning mercies. Ask God to remind you each morning that the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end, but are new every morning. You know, I pray that prayer for myself every single morning. Every morning, the first thing I do when I get up is to pray that. And the reason I pray that is because if I am not satisfied in God's steadfast love and reminded of that first thing in the morning, then my heart will run after other things in the world. Sometimes good things, sometimes bad things. I will want my heart satisfied. We all want our heart satisfied, don't we? And I will seek after anything to satisfy it. I will try and build my life, build my hope, build my home in this world with the things God has made, instead of in God who made them. And so I need to pray, we need to pray, satisfy me with your love. Show me your love. Show me your unending, never giving up love. Your love which you had for me before the world began. Your love which is from everlasting, because you're from everlasting. Before you created me, you loved me. Show me that love. Show me the love that meant that you sent your son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross for me. Me, even though I'm sinful and I've turned my back on you, you love me so much you sent your son to die for me that I might be forgiven and might be right with you simply through trusting in what he's done. Show me that love. Show me your love which will keep me throughout my life, through the good times, through the bad times, through the ups and downs. Show me your love which outweighs all the difficulties and troubles that I experience, which is greater, which is bigger than them all. Show me your love which will turn my present sorrows into future joys, my present suffering into future glory. Show me that love, that transforming love. Show me your love which will bring me ultimately through death and raise me from the dead like you raised Jesus Christ from the dead, so that I can be with you forever. Show me that eternal aspect to your love, that love which will never end throughout eternity for me, and which I will experience more and more as my days go on forever and forever. Show me your love. Satisfy me with your love. But third, ask God to teach you, ask God to satisfy you, and ask God to establish you. Moses finishes by saying, let your work be shown to your servants and your glorious power to their children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. It's a prayer that we wouldn't waste our lives. None of us want to waste our lives. What we're saying to God here is, And what Moses is saying is, Lord, show me how to live my life. Show me what you want me to do that I might not, at the end of my life, have wasted it. Wasted it on rubbish. Wasted it on things that are passing away and won't last. But I will have done something for you and for others that will make a difference in this world and make a difference in the next world. That's what we should pray. That's what the Queen prayed for. And that's how she lived. The Queen lived serving this nation, serving other people, and serving God. And she's made a difference in time, in this nation, and maybe for eternity as well. And if you live like that, you will do the same. Ask God to help you. Say today, Lord, establish the work of my hands. May the stuff I do today serve other people and be a blessing to them, and serve you and be a blessing to you, and may make a difference today in this world, and may make a difference for eternity by helping other people make their home with you and find you their dwelling place. That is a great prayer to pray tomorrow morning when you wake up. Oh God, our help in ages past. Our hope for years to come, our shelter from the stormy blast, and our eternal home. Let me pray. Gracious God and Heavenly Father, we this week are sad and sorrowful. Comfort us with your presence, the presence of the Almighty and Everlasting God. And help us, Lord, to make our dwelling place in you, to make you our home, that we might be secure and safe in this world and secure and safe for the next. Lord, if there is anyone here this morning who hasn't done that, Lord, reveal your great and your steadfast love and bring them in, that they might know what it is to have in their lives, underneath their lives, the everlasting arms. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.